Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal: enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye and WisPolitics Look at This Week in the Capitol. First, I was there. Democrats criticized the farm bill in Congress. And Vin Baker, former Buck star, and Governor Walker at the governor's prayer breakfast. And Kel DeRoy, one of the many Democrats running for governor, talk about the changes she'd like to make in gun laws. And Assembly Democrats take their Foxconn concerns on the road. I was there.
You can't concentrate when your belly is grumbling. You can't concentrate and do well when you don't know where your next meal is going to come from. And so it is imperative that we step up and that we take care of our most vulnerable in this state. But I think it highlights the misplaced priorities of the Republicans, and that they can turn their back on families living on the margins in our communities, that are working, that are playing by the rules, and then to remove this rug underneath them from them is incredibly cruel and heartless.
We need to understand it's not the church you go to, it's not the usher that keeps rolling their eyes at you when you come in, it's not the preacher, what he preached last Sunday, he was a little off. That's all distractions from what you need to do internally. And so mine was an inside job, and I'm blessed to be back in a community that I love. But thank you so much, Milwaukee, for having me this morning. Thank you for allowing me to share my story. Thank you for allowing me back in the community. I truly feel a part of this community, and I truly feel like I'm here for a purpose, to serve God first and then serve the community as well.
And all you got to do is pray. And it doesn't necessarily mean getting on your knees or bowing or closing your eyes. It can just be driving down the road saying, "Hey, God, I don't know what's going on in my life. I need your help right now." That's what prayer is all about. It's not limited for days like today. It's not limited for the confines of a church. It's not limited for special places or special times. It's at any point and any time in your life. It will make a difference, and it's the only thing in the end that will make a difference. Thank you for making that a powerful part of today.
So I think that we need to have universal background checks that close all the loopholes, and that's now very easy to implement. We should reinstate the 48-hour cooling off period. Everybody knows when hunting season is, and you can plan appropriately, but if we want to prevent suicides and domestic violence deaths with guns, we need to do that. We should also have red flag laws to allow a loved one or law enforcement to go before a judge and temporarily suspend somebody's gun buying privileges. We also, I think, have to address the weapons side of it, and I support reinstating the assault weapons ban, as well as addressing high-capacity magazines and other modifications like bump stocks and silencers that can make these deadly weapons much more effective for mass shootings.
It is political in that, you know, the governor ran on being an economic development governor, hadn't seen the results, and you know this was a big thing to show. Look at this, you know, I'm going to bring this in. And again, there are opportunities there. It's just that it is awfully expensive and awfully risky, even under the very best case scenario.
Spend some time really trying to understand what does work in this situation. Are there incentives that do work? Are there formulas that do make sense? And the truth is, like you said, study after study says, no, this really doesn't work. What we know really does work is education, investments in infrastructure is a much safer long-term bet than this. And there's certainly example after example where states have, you know, use these incentives, brought companies in, and then they were gone, and they really had nothing to show for it.
The governor celebrated May Day, May 1, mm-hmm. by releasing his first campaign ad. He followed that up with his second campaign ad a few days later. Now, I think it's really important what the governor's team has decided to stress in the first ads. So the first ad, which we're not going to play because it's all over the airwaves, mm-hmm. Stresses public safety and job training with Shayla, Waukesha County, GOP Bedrock County, mm-hmm. Being able to be trained as a paramedic and a firefighter. And then the governor saying, my fast forward program allows people to be trained into these specialized jobs. The backdrop, of course, is a 2.9% unemployment rate. And the second one deals with one family. A mother says, I had my son's funeral planned. Tyler, he was 80 pounds. So, JR, why did the governor pick those two themes?
Suburban women. So, big picture pullback. Walker's going to talk in his ad campaign that goes through July about his accomplishments. He wants to remind people what he's done. Remember, Governor Walker has talked regularly the last few weeks about how they have to remind voters of what they've accomplished in Wisconsin. He's, taking little shots at the media for not, hyping enough of these things or whatever, but that's part of the message. We have to talk about our successes. Well, here are some successes in his mind. The Fast Forward program, provides job training grants, and the HOPE agenda, which you worked on with John Nygren. The subtext, though, is who are these ads aimed at? They're aimed at suburban women. The Republican Party has been hemorrhaging support from suburban women ever since Donald Trump kind of started running for president. Mm-hmm. And it's not gotten any better. We've seen evidence of that in races across the country and in Wisconsin the last year and a half, right? They need to do better with that demographic. This is a kind of a nod toward that demographic. Now, this is not, somebody told me, a swing for a grand slam out of the gate. This is the first ads of a long campaign. And the buy, from what we know, is laid down until at least July. So this is, you're going to see roll out a number of messages. Now the questions to watch are, how long are they burning these messages? These ads run for a couple weeks, a couple days. How frequently are they up? What do they follow it up with? What's the theme? Because you have to, what I've been taught about ads is you have to burn in a message. You can't have it be a couple days and go away. People won't remember it. So they ride these for a while. Will there be a constant theme in these ads that we see? There's stuff like that to watch for the next couple of months.
What did you think of the first one, Shayla looking and saying, I was able, as a woman in Waukesha County, to train into firefighter paramedic, and then the governor wrapping it up. You thought it generally worked?
The feedback I've got from the Walker campaign is they think that he does well when he looks in the camera one-on-one with the viewer. So I'd expect that theme in all these ads of him talking directly about their successes. It's clear from people I talked to that it's geared toward a certain demographic to get the ball rolling because, they expect the conservative base will turn out for Walker come November because they've been there for him so often. But that's not enough in this environment to win. They need to get beyond that. Remember, he's been at 52% roughly, give or take a couple points, in three elections. He can't lose 2.5 points and pull this off. He's got to stay around, 50 plus one. They need to expand the voter universe a little bit for themselves.
And it goes without saying that when you're 47-47 approval, disapproval, voters already have a perception. So he doesn't have to introduce himself Mm-mm. to anybody.
It goes back to reminding people about the success. Now, Walker, folks, don't forget, will point out the right track, wrong track number in the state. They follow that. They think that's really his ceiling when it comes to the vote. Democrats, though, are going, hey, wait a second. He's out with two ads the first week. This is a guy who's, in their minds, vulnerable. To them, he's panicking right away because nothing's working so far. They're throwing stuff out there to try and, pull people in.
And the very painful struggle of Tyler in the second ad and mm-hmm. his parents. Why choose the opioid and methamphetamine epidemic as a second theme of the ad?
Go to any community in Wisconsin and see the impact of that. There are people who have been touched by it across economic lines, racial lines. It is a universal issue in Wisconsin. It plays well as rural areas especially. It's something it's impactful for people.
Okay, the governor starts his ad campaign. Democrats in the state capitol opened a theme campaign against the U.S. Farm Bill, which is, in Congress. Hmm? Where do they see the upside coming out against what they feel is the punitive side of the Farm Bill?
Because you're talking about it's hurting average people, that this is a rigged system, that they're benefiting the wealthy instead of you. It's part of the language you're hearing from both sides anymore, right? The rigged system. This is part of the Democratic argument of they're favoring these folks over you folks, and we're here for you folks.
Okay. Well, it's pretty interesting because when you go through the Fiscal Bureau memo, I talked to the analyst who did it, and the memo warns 11% of Wisconsin's 682,000 food share recipients, would lose eligibility, but then you focus on the children. 23,369 children could lose eligibility not only for food share, which is a benefit to their parents, but for with free and reduced cost lunches. And when you bore down in the memo, 36% of the children getting food share benefits in Wisconsin live in Milwaukee County, which is why State Representative Jonathan Brostoff said, "Why are Republicans in Wisconsin and Washington so determined to fund corporate welfare and tax cuts to the wealthy while repeatedly slashing the programs that ensure our communities thrive?" But go to the other end of the state, and the newest Democrat, State Senator Shockner, "This bill removes support for the most basic of all needs, hunger. When people do not have access to nutritious food, it becomes much harder to overcome employment, housing, and health barriers." So are they setting this up, if Congress passes this, what Democrats consider punitive, are they setting it up to try to come through in the Capitol with a bill that would hold these food share recipients harmless?
No. They have to win control to make it possible, right? So yeah. That's a big question. They might push that issue. Don't forget also the context that they've been pushing back against Governor Walker and Republicans' overhaul of the social safety net in Wisconsin, period. I mean, like drug testing, job requirements, you know, they've been calling those punitive as well. So it fits in that message.
It's all part of that
well.
Theme?
Yeah,
all
it seems like a little
theme.
Bit.
Okay. Do we know where the Sensenbrenners and the Ryans and the Duffys and the Grothman stand on this farm bill?
Not top of my head.
No, I don't either. Okay. I listed this as a topic, JR, because I wondered if it was the biggest trial balloon of the week. When the CEO of Corning tells financial analysts on a call, "Our strategy was that we weren't going to put in new melting capacity for display unless we got at least $2 out of every $3 from others." Now, Foxconn needs some type of a glass manufacturing property close to its LCD plant.
And the state officials have mentioned Corning by name more than once in talking about how this would Foxconn have a ripple effect and bring in other suppliers into the area.
Right, and a Corning plant in Europe costs $1.3 billion with a B dollars. So do you consider this a trial balloon by the Corning CEO?
Well, it was interesting. I saw a story last week, I think, in the Business Journal talking about what they want $2 out of $3 paid for the plant. Now, Walker and the administration has said for months and months and months, nobody else is getting help. It's going to be Foxconn, then Foxconn will be the attraction for the suppliers. So that means a question, well, who's going to help Corning then, or whomever, build this plant? Will Foxconn pick up that tab? For what I saw this week, the WEDIC official said, no, we're not helping anybody, which
right.
is the same thing they've been saying for consistently.
Yeah.
So then who does? And how's this plant happen, and how does that work? I don't understand those things yet.
Well, the WEDIC CEO, Mark Hogan, said, as you just said, state incentives, totaling $2.85 billion for Foxconn, all Foxconn-rated developments, quote, are not going to change, close quote. And then Assembly Democratic Leader Hintz piled on, there's zero appetite and zero money for $600 million for Corning. Okay, but the governor also wanted Foxconn-like benefits to Kimberly-Clark. What's the difference here?
Good question. I think there's, well, one difference is they realize there's an issue with Foxconn, period. They have to sell the benefits of Foxconn to the state. And we saw some things the last couple of weeks about the improvements of, you know, the air quality
air
permits,
quality,
the
diversion
water.
Of the water.
So that's their construction's going to start, you know.
They're going to break ground.
If not already, it's already going. So those were good things, right? They had to show progress and show an impact elsewhere. The other issue, though, is once you give Foxconn this thing, people in like Eau Claire and Appleton and Neenah and Green Bay and go, okay, what about my plant? So Kimberly-Clark, the difference is that's not associated with Foxconn. That's not a Foxconn, you know, ripple effect. That is a existing Wisconsin employer that is looking at layoffs. So they need to do something, Republicans in their minds, to assure those folks, hey, we're worried about your two. We hear you, too. There's a difference between that and Corning, because Corning is another piece of the Foxconn. If you add more money into Foxconn, into that pot, you reinforce a message to voters outstate of, these guys are getting everything available, what's left for me? And that's not helpful in that message you're trying to sell about the impact of this project statewide.
Stay with me here. So when Foxconn breaks ground, and the governor might be there with a huge scissors,
oh, yeah.
Do you think so?
Absolutely. Would shovel, hard hat, everything, yeah.
Will that be the third or fourth Walker reelect campaign ad?
Good question, but he is definitely tied to this project, and the question for him is, can he sell it between now and November, whatever it is, 6th, that this is not just for Southeast Wisconsin. This is transformative for the entire state, and I you're in Black River Falls, if you're in Wausau, if you're in Eau Claire, La Crosse, you're going to see an impact too. That's why I talk about the suppliers.
Yes.
The construction announcement, the contractors that they'd hired are mostly, you know, in-state, all that stuff, to try and portray an impact for not just this corner of Racine County
right.
or the region of southeastern Wisconsin, but for everybody. And, you know, Democrats are saying no, that they're doing these tours of the state, these Foxconn town halls, and saying no, they're, you know, what's there for you? Like, that's part of their message.
I just am so intrigued by how Foxconn plays out in the next few months. Okay, new topic. Yesterday I spent, a videographer and I spent much of the time in Green Bay interviewing the candidates in the special election Senate District 1. I find it a very intriguing race. Remember, it's been represented by senators with the last name of Lissay since 1977, but you have an incredibly interesting primary. So let's listen to about 4 minutes of back and forth between the two candidates, Republican Representative Andre Jacques and Alex Renard, both of DePere, on several key issues, including gun laws, where they don't disagree much, transportation. But anyway, let's listen to about 4 minutes of them going back and forth, and then you and I will talk about it. What do you consider the top issue in this race, sir?
You know, I think the top issue is really, well, we're sent down to Madison to address the entire spectrum of issues that come before the state. And so independence is really a key issue. And somebody who's going to stand up for the district, stand up for principals, but also be able to work across the aisle and be an independent voice for the district. And that's what I think I have been in the 2nd Assembly District.
Number one being education and job training. I think it's imperative that we reinvest in our children's future and provide good training opportunities for individuals and families to have upward mobility.
When we talk about transportation, we want to make sure that Northeast Wisconsin isn't getting short shrift. And I think when we look at the funding source, you know, certainly we could direct funds from the general fund into the transportation fund and build it into the base on an ongoing basis. And certainly the governor has also described a framework whereby you could have an overall reduction in general taxes and an increase in taxes for the transportation fund, gas tax or registration fees. It's going to be a budget issue, and it's all about priorities. That's what the budget is.
When it comes to all the issues and solutions that have been proposed for funding, basically, at the end of the day, I'm an individual who doesn't like taxes. I don't like to see them raised. I do not want to see the overall tax burden of a family or individual in the state of Wisconsin or the first state Senate district increased. We can't pass the buck. We don't want to just take out another loan and increase debt. So we're in the process, and I think we're very close to being able to find that money in some other areas for funding. I think we can do that on the state level, too.
Without raising either the gas tax or the $75?
Correct.
I think one of the things that we were able to do with prevailing wage repeal, particularly for the local level, is when you're not dealing with the Davis-Bacon mandates that attach for most state highway projects because they're using federal dollars, although we did the funding swaps legislation now. But anything that uses federal dollars where, you know, you get a lot more road for your dollar when you're able to bid it at the local level.
Would you have voted for the prevailing wage bill?
Once again, all of that stuff is in the past, and I'm looking forward to where we're going, what's happening going forward.
And I've always been a strong proponent of school choice. I actually was the author with Senator Olson of expanding the public school choice open enrollment legislation, my first term in the legislature. So whether that's other public schools or charter schools or private schools, having those dollars follow the student, I think, is something very important.
I come from a family that my parents exercised their parental choice. I was homeschooled, so I think that's a phenomenal opportunity, and I think that's preserving parental rights to be able to have them choose where their children go to school and provide other opportunities for them.
Do we need to make any changes in gun laws to keep our schools safer?
And I think we've had issues with enforcement of gun laws, and certainly that's something that in the Assembly we addressed in terms of straw purchasers or human holsters or making sure that there's sufficient penalties for those that have committed gun crimes. You know, we really need to make sure that our current laws are being enforced.
When it comes to laws across the board and gun laws, I think it's important that we actively work to enforce the laws that are already on the books. And the bigger issue when it comes to school safety, every child should have a safe environment in which to be educated. And I think that also goes, in my opinion, to putting those decisions in the hands of the local districts, the families, the parents, pulling that from Madison, and then the state should facilitate that.
How would you summarize the differences between you and your opponent?
I mean, there's already a particular lobbyist or lobbying group that are trying to characterize me as a career politician for being in office 7 years. The reality is John Gard is accompanying my opponent around to really most of his appearances here in the district. I think people can connect the dots. It's very clear that I ruffled some feathers and stepped on some toes on, you know, not just the pro-life issue, but certainly prevailing wage repeal, or at least insisting that there be significant reform, which we accomplished.
I've agreed, since the Senate will be out of session in 2018, if elected, still work with constituents, still work with colleagues. There'll still be an office to handle constituent services and issues, but I will not collect a penny of per diem, and I will return my entire 2018 salary, since I won't actually be on the floor unless it's an extraordinary circumstance. I'm the definition of an outsider. I have never been an elected official before. I haven't served in government. I've stepped up because I want to now. And I think, once again, a servant legislator in leadership is what the founding fathers and what was intended.
I don't quite understand why I'm the career politician. I just want to make as big of an impact as I can in the time that I have, which is why I want to go to the state Senate.
JR, help me understand why in that interview, those segments of which we just heard, Andre Jacques mentions John Gard.
Because John Gard is
former
the foil,
Speaker John Gard.
The foil that Andre wants to use. John Gard is now a lobbyist. Gard, or Jacques, wants to use him as like a foil in some ways. That Gard's part of like the establishment that he's, you know, associated with, these trade groups that opposed right to work, prevailing wage, all those kinds of things that he championed. Andre's also trying to play the kind of like the underdog card.
Yeah.
You know, that the establishment's behind my opponent.
Right.
I'm the one fighting the good fight for the little guy kind of thing. That's part of it.
Okay, yeah. Andre Jacques is saying, look, I went there, I stood up for my beliefs, I ruffled the feathers, that's why the establishment Republicans, which is a very dangerous term, mm-hmm. is against me. So talk to me about Renard. He's a fresh face. His family has had a successful business there mm-hmm. in that area. And is he going to be a lot better funded?
Well, the perception is that the kind of Republicans in Madison were looking for somebody besides Andre to run for the seat. I mean, it was an open secret. Frank Lissay was looking to move on from this Senate seat for
more than a year.
Months and months, if not more than a year.
I'll give more than a year.
No, we'll go two, three.
Okay.
But anyway, but Frank had made clear that he wanted to move on. So Republicans are looking for somebody else. They knew that when Frank did leave, that Andre would run for this seat. He's a sitting member of the Assembly. You get your leg up in a special election, you know, on down the line. So they saw Andre, or see Andre, as a little bit of a poor fit because he's more conservative in their minds than the district as a whole. Don't forget, that district went to Rebecca Dallet by like 5-6 points. I can't remember what it is exactly in the April election. Now, imperfect, you know, example, because it's a judicial race, not a pure partisan race. But they see that district as somewhat more moderate, and that a one that Dems could win the right scenario. So for some of these Republicans I talked to in Madison, they see Andre as not as strong an opponent for the Democrat. They acknowledge that Dems got a great candidate in Caleb Frostman, that he's executive
director of the economic development of Sturgeon Bay.
And yeah, so he's got that background. So they think he's a good candidate. So to them, you know, Alex Renard is this guy who can do the outsider thing. He's not part of Madison. He can run as an outsider, talk about his private sector experience. Mm-hmm. The question is, who's going to turn out in a May primary? You know, Andre's got these kind of relationships with these, kind of groups around Madison that lobby on things, pro-life groups. Will they turn out for him, you know, on May 15th? Will Alex Renard have an apparatus to drive his supporters out the polls? I have no idea. I have not seen a May 15th primary in my 18 years covering the Capitol. I don't think I've seen one of those in May.
Well, I found it intriguing that when I asked Alex Renard two questions, what specific votes did Representative Jacques take that you would have voted the other way? He said, that's in the past. I'm going to look towards the future. And then I said, how would you have voted on the prevailing wage? And as that segment, he said, I told you, I only care about votes coming in the future. So I think that's very telling.
And don't forget, John Gard opposed, like he lobbied against prevailing wage, and John Gard
on behalf of the operating engineers, correct?
So I believe so. So you see a connect. Is there a connection? Well, we can kind of decipher one there. They're not going to say it out loud. Now, there's also a group that we saw is running some ads backing Renard that, the treasurer of that group is a longtime friend and supporter of Gard's,
yes.
Dentist. Gard told me he doesn't have anything to do with that group, but, you know, people draw their own conclusions about that.
Just two announcements. If you go to WSI.org, you can see the full interviews with both Representative Jacques and Alex Renard. And on Monday, I'll be interviewing candidates in the special election Assembly District 42. JR, just quickly, 359 applications. to either process or grow industrial hemp. That's a big number. I just find that very interesting.
Yeah, but DOJ is kind of putting like the damper on that, saying
that just
that,
happened yesterday.
Know, they're not going to. You're not going to be allowed to produce CBD oil if you do this. So it's kind of like Jesse Kramer, outgoing Republican lawmaker who helped authorize a bill.
He was a lead sponsor in the assembly.
Not happy on Facebook this week about that announcement that this is kind of like, again, tamping down the enthusiasm for what they hoped was going to be a big deal. So now what do you do? If you want to grow hemp, what do you do?
If you've invested, if you paid the money to apply and you want to grow or you want to process, it's very costly. But the rules and the regulations are really oppressive. So it's just very fascinating. Okay, we're running a little short on time. Let's go to your stock picks.
So we have Walker ads rising. So we talked to two out of the frigate, who they're aimed at. Here's kind of the other piece of what's going on. Tom Barrett, what's he going to do? We're now in week two and a half, almost three, something like that.
Well, we're 5 weeks away from their convention. Doesn't he have an obligation and duty to?
And what's interesting is that talk flared up. I was coming back from New York, and that talk flared up on that Tuesday, and since then it's been quiet. So what's going on? I keep making calls. He's still making calls and, you know, feeling people out about whether he's getting into this. But we're getting the time. It's like, you know, we have 2,000 signatures due June 1st.
June 1.
Oh, by the way, if you want to speak at convention this year, you have to have 2,000 into the party or the state by May 25th.
You do.
To cross the barrier to actually speak at convention. So the clock is running. And Barrett also freezes the field a little bit, right? If they want to raise money and people are going, well, Tom Barrett might run, what are you going to do? Now, Barrett people are like, hey, these guys have been in this for months. If they can't raise money because of this, that's their problem. Yeah. You know, they should have other things. You know, they've got other issues to worry about. But that's still out there hanging right now.
Okay, and Mix, you're conjuring up a name that we don't often say.
Doug LaFollette.
Doug LaFollette.
So he has a primary opponent who's announced, a Madison Alderwoman. Here's the question I have, though. Is this just going to be Scott Ross 2.0? Remember, Scott Ross ran against LaFollette 12 years ago, made the case that he had been there too long, wasn't being effective, and got less than 30% of the vote. In 2006, a blue wave was coming that year. There's all this enthusiasm. So what's going to happen this time? The question I get from people is, how do you run that race against the LaFollette name? Not necessarily Doug LaFollette, but the LaFollette name. Because
yes.
I say that because the race gets such little attention. You have a U.S. Senate race that's one of the top ones in the country. You've got a contested primary for governor. You've got a contested primary for lieutenant governor. So how do you get attention for Secretary of State? And when voters walk in the booth, in August, they go, well, I know that name. That's the incumbent. So there is a challenge for her ahead to get attention and break through that tradition.
And you mentioned the U.S. Senate race, and one of those combatants is your following.
Kevin Nicholson. So if you watched the debate last week, and if you are like us and you pay attention to politics, you picked up the Kevin Nicholson swipe at Keith Gilkes, who is a top advisor to Scott Walker. It's very subtle, but if you're paying attention, you saw, okay, well, that's something voters aren't going to pick up on. But now we have this new thing this week about questioning the cognitive process of military vets who support the Democratic Party.
Right.
What's interesting about this is that, you know, on the one hand, I think I get the impression that Nicholson's trying to really play up that he is a true conservative, that he's made the conversion, he is a conservative, and he is a fighter for the cause. At the same time, if you are a Republican in Wisconsin and trying to win a statewide race, especially in a year that could be bad for Republicans, you need moderates and some Democrats to win statewide. Scott Walker's gotten them. That's been part of his success in past elections. How are you going to do that by doing something like this? There's also this thing people noticed where whenever you question Kevin Nicholson, the first reaction is, I was in the military, you can't question my record. I don't have that plays with voters. You have to watch how that goes going forward. And finally, just a little post note, he has had a lot of outside help with the ads he's run.
Yes.
There is one this group ran America's PAC that mentioned his conversion, like the conversion of the Missouri governor, who, by the way, faces a sex scandal. Now, the group says an ad
he's doing court next month on a felony invasion of privacy charge.
And the legislature is coming in about impeachment.
Yep.
The group says that was not supposed to run, that they swapped it out with Phil Graham instead of him. But that's the danger you face as a candidate when you have your message controlled sometimes or dictated by outside groups who are spending so much money on your behalf.
Okay, we only got a couple seconds, but will there be an endorsement vote at the Republican State Convention that you and I will be at a week from tomorrow?
Yes.
There will be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you think when the U.S. Chaplain meets with Paul Ryan, it'll be to hear his confession?
Good question.
I don't think so. By the way, the Brewers are in first place. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for May 4.
Rewind, Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.